This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
However, out of those 15, over 5 countries have not reported any cholera cases for over 4 weeks, so we would consider that the transmission in those countries is not active.
That's Patrick Otim, the World Health Organization's Regional Incident Manager in Africa, on this year's cholera outbreak. Details coming up. Also, a desert area that rarely gets much rain but has been deluged the past 5 years. And a mass grave in Cameroon contains the bodies of 9 people abducted by rebels in June 2021. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Military officials in Cameroon say they have found a mass grave near the border with Nigeria containing the bodies of 9 civilians, including 5 government officials, who were abducted by rebels in June 2021. Government troops were led to the mass grave by a separatist fighter who participated in the killing but surrendered and joined a disarmament and demobilization center. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military says government troops exhumed the bodies from a mass grave about 20 kilometers, that is 12.4 miles, from Ekondo Titi. Ekondo Titi is a town located in Dian, an administrative unit on the border with Nigeria. Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Ngwele says he led several dozen Cameroon government troops to the mass grave Saturday. Ngwele says Cameroon's military exhumed bodies of the civilians and government officials after a one-week reconnaissance mission to the area, which is prone to regular separatist attacks. He says the Cameroon government has asked the military to transport the corpses to Boya, capital of the English-speaking southwest region, for families to identify and collect for reburial. Ngwele says Cameroon should now be informed that the government officials are dead and no longer missing. Cameroon's military says the remains of the civilians and delegates were transported out of the bush in bags. Ngwele said the victims were abducted in Dian by a self-proclaimed separatist general known as Ten Kobo on June 15, 2021. At the time, separatists claimed responsibility on social media and said the officials were abducted for collaborating with Cameroon's central government in Yaoundé. One of the officials, Mabia Johnson Modika, was killed 3 days later, while the other 5 were considered missing until the mass grave was found over the weekend. Last month, Tamaya Clinton, a 24-year-old separatist fighter who disarmed and surrendered to authorities in Cameroon's southwest region, said the officials were killed by separatist fighters. He promised to take government troops to the grave where the officials were buried. The military did not say if Tamaya took them to the mass grave or not. Bernard Okalia Bilai is the governor of Cameroon's southwest region.
Des élus locaux qui ont l'ancien de la population.
Bilai says the discovery of the mass grave once more indicates how brutal and insensitive separatist fighters are to civilians. He says the English-speaking elite should go to their towns and villages and ask fighters who are still hiding with weapons in the bush to surrender and be forgiven, without which they will be killed by government troops. He says the military will track fighters who have killed civilians and government officials since separatist crisis erupted. Bilai spoke on Cameroon state broadcaster CRTV. Cameroon's separatist crisis conflicts began in 2017 after teachers and lawyers in the northwest and southwest regions, where English is the predominant language, protested alleged discrimination from the country's French-speaking majority. The military responded with a crackdown, and fighters took up weapons, claiming to defend English-speaking civilians from what separatists described as extreme military brutality. The conflict has killed an estimated 6,000 people and displaced more than 750,000, according to the International Crisis Group. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
There has been an uptick in the number of cholera outbreaks around the world this year, and the most affected region is Africa. 25 countries worldwide have reported cases since the start of the year. The World Health Organization says because of the multiple and simultaneous outbreaks and a shortage of resources, including the oral cholera vaccine, it continues to assess the risk as very high globally. Patrick Otem, WHO's regional incident manager in Africa, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam there is both good and bad news in the latest update on cholera.
The latest country to report cholera outbreak is Uganda. It brings the number of countries within Africa that have been affected by cholera this year to 15 countries. However, out of those 15, over five countries have not reported any cholera cases for over 4 weeks, so we would consider that the transmission in those countries is not active. So the other 10 countries, most of them have been having a decline in cases. The five countries that have not reported any cholera cases include South Sudan, which contained the cholera way back. Zambia has gone over 4 weeks without any case. South Africa has also gone over 4 weeks without a case. And then we have Eswatini, which also contained that, the cholera cases. And then Malawi is almost towards the tail end of its outbreak. In fact, this afternoon we received a communication from the government of Malawi that they have lifted the public health declaration. Back in December, they declared cholera as a public health emergency, and that has been lifted.
And those countries that you mentioned where there's no more cholera cases being reported, like South Sudan, what do you attribute the change to?
South Sudan early in the year had an outbreak. It was a limited outbreak in an internally displaced people's camp in Bentiu. So that one was quickly managed because it's a concentrated population within the internally displaced people's camp in Bentiu town. So that was responded to and contained. But that's also a population that was vaccinated with the oral cholera vaccine in Bentiu. So they are fairly partially protected against the cholera.
But that's a huge camp, isn't it? There's hundreds of thousands of people there.
Yes, there are hundreds of thousands of people in that camp.
Tell me about the not-so-good news and where you've seen cases break out more recently in Africa.
So the not-so-good news is Uganda. Though it's a fairly small outbreak, they have had outbreak in two districts of Kayunga and Namayingo. As of Friday, I think in total they had over 40-something cases. It's not a very big outbreak, and they are responding. We are supporting them. They should be able to bring that under control. The second one then was in Ethiopia, in the northern part of the country, in Amhara region, where they had an outbreak in an area called Kwara. And the area is also close to a location that is hosting some of the people who have fled the conflict in Sudan. In the last few days, you have heard that the security situation in Amhara has deteriorated. So that's a point of concern for us, because then somehow the response actions for cholera have not been as smooth as they would have been. And we were already beginning to see a downward trend.
You often have these outbreaks like you're describing in places like Ethiopia and the Amhara region and Uganda when there's a large influx of people and there's overcrowded conditions and there's poor sanitation, right?
Yes, an overcrowding of people, poor sanitation, those are all big risk factors for cholera outbreak. The cholera outbreak in Amhara, for instance, happened at a religious holy site. It's a holy site where people go, and there's common water that people go and perform religious rituals into. So the water got contaminated and that outbreak. So it has happened before as well.
That's Patrick Otem, the World Health Organization's regional incident manager in Africa. He was speaking today with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Brazzaville, the capital of Congo. Sudan's state-run Suna news agency reports that torrential rains have destroyed more than 450 homes in the country's north. Suna says changing weather patterns saw northern state buffeted with heavy rain. It described the vast region bordering Egypt and Libya as a desert area that rarely received rain in the past but has been witnessing devastating rains for the past 5 years. Medics and aid groups warn that Sudan's rainy season, which began in June, could spell disaster for millions more, increasing the risk of malnutrition, vector-borne diseases, and displacement across the country. The warnings come as the conflict continues between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces that plunged millions into hunger. The World Health Organization says outbreaks of cholera and measles have already been reported in parts of the country that have been nearly impossible for relief missions to access. Zambia has recorded an increase in cases of gender-based violence during the second quarter of the year, with almost 10,000, an increase of more than 30%. Zambian officials indicate that about 5,000 victims were women, while 1,500 were men. Katie Short reports from Lusaka.
Zambian police spokesperson Ray Hamonga told VOA that the increase in gender-based violence cases is worrying and needs urgent attention. Hamonga adds that the Zambia police, through their victim support unit, is offering counseling to victims as well as perpetrators on the dangers of the vice.
2,449 child victims were abused countrywide, representing 24.5% of all the gender-based violence cases recorded. 5,828 were women and 1,711 were men abused countrywide, representing 58.4% and 17.1% respectively.
Gordon Nachiminga is the head of programs at the Zambia National Women's Lobby, an NGO that focuses on promoting women's equality and measures against gender-based violence. Nachiminga told VOA that his organization is sensitizing men as well on the dangers of gender-based violence in an effort to curb the vice.
Men are strong, they have resources, they have the authority, they have the power. It's easy for them to use all those privileges to be abusive to the women and the girls. But we train them to use all those privileges that they have to be of a solution to gender-based violence.
Even though Zambia has laws against gender-based violence, there are few prosecutions as most women who depend on men economically withdraw their cases. Experts recommend stiffer penalties for perpetrators and economic support for victims so that they can lead productive lives after an abusive relationship ends. For VOA News, I'm Kathy Short, Lusaka, Zambia.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. ECOWAS's military intervention deadline came and went Sunday without any change in the political situation in Niger. President Bazoum remains deposed and his whereabouts are still unknown to the public. The National Council for the Safeguard of the Homeland, the junta's formal name, is still effectively in charge of Niger. Eric Manirakiza is the host of French to Africa's weekly Focus Sahel show. He is closely monitoring the situation in Niger. He joins me today in studio to brief us on the matter. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
So, Eric, let's start with the latest. What do you hear?
So, first, life continues as usual with people going about their routines, while others rally to back the junta. We saw it on Sunday, more than 35,000 people gathered in the stadium, and the junta came to talk to them in order to get their support. So that's what is happening there, and the population appears to adapt to power cuts, and the price, especially of rice, has risen. So another thing that I was told, bank withdrawals are restricted to 200,000 CFA units. So
which is how much?
I don't know exactly how much in US dollars, but
okay.
Yeah, so that's the what is happening okay. there. And the other thing is the expiration of the ultimatum did not trigger a military intervention because according to the ECOWA summit, the 1 week was given to the junta to restore President Bazoum.
Mm-hmm.
But ECOWAS stated that it does not rule out the use of force. But so there is another summit coming this week. We should know more after that summit if really they're going to go for the use of force. But okay. another thing is, there is a significant sanctions also loom now. Nigeria supplies 80% of the electricity, this causing frequent outages. Business and economic sectors are severely impacted. This presents, I think, a big challenging situation for the junta to handle. So the lingering question is how long this can endure.
So it looks like, by your answer, ECOWAS leaders are kind of gravitating more to find a diplomatic solution to the crisis rather than them going, resorting the use of force. So that's basically what you're saying, right?
Yes, because you have been hearing many voices argue for giving diplomacy a chance, yet prolonged waiting plays into the junta's hands, according to some analysts in the region. And inaction also will allow juntas to thrive and sow further chaos. So there is a kind of hesitations towards resorting to force, which is understandable because military intervention entails loss of life and property destruction. So before they go to this last resort, they have to set up everything. But you know that the chief of staff of ECOWAS military countries, they already set up their options in order to intervene as soon as they are given a go-ahead by their heads of state.
So one last question. The United States and France, they've stationed hundreds of troops, many of whom assist with counter-terrorism missions in Niger. Any word from the United States or France?
They are the two governments. They say that they support President Bazoum and they appealed the junta to release President Bazoum and to restore him in on power. So that's the one point. But at the other side, you see that the junta now is somehow cannot go back to this. They want to hold power, and they channels this ambition into especially an anti-French struggle and gaining popular support. And this populism links him, the Niger junta, to Burkina and Mali, where ECOWAS rejects military governance. So ECOWAS takes Niger seriously. This is also this summit, which is going to take place in Abuja.
Mm-hmm.
And its failure, I mean ECOWAS, would harm democracy and its credibility. That's what people are saying. So time will tell.
Time will tell. Eric Manirakiza, host of French to Africa's weekly Focus Sahel show, thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
In South Africa, media are reporting an investigation has found that the government did not secretly supply Russia with arms and ammunition last year. A judge concluded it was the other way around, that the firearms and ammunition involved were supplied by Moscow to the South African army. Darren Taylor reports.
The investigation was triggered when United States Ambassador to South Africa Ruben Brigati made a statement in Pretoria in May that reverberated around the world.
The arming of Russia by South Africa with the vessel that landed in Simonstown is fundamentally unacceptable. We are confident that weapons were loaded onto that vessel, and I would bet my life on the accuracy of that assertion.
Brigati said his allegations were based on U.S. intelligence reports. Tensions between South Africa and Washington were already high because of Pretoria's close ties with President Vladimir Putin's government. South Africa has never condemned Russia's invasion and attack on Ukraine. Some members of the U.S. Congress called for South Africa to be excluded from Washington's African Growth and Opportunity Act. This gives South African products duty-free access to American markets, earning about $11 billion a year. The judge appointed by President Cyril Ramaphosa has, however, concluded that no arms or ammunition were loaded onto a Russian cargo ship at the naval base near Cape Town in December. Instead, says the judge, it was Russia supplying an old order from 2019 of guns and bullets for South African special forces fighting insurgents in northern Mozambique.
If there is nothing to hide, then the report should be made public. You know, we have such a low trust deficit in our government here in South Africa. In fact,
Wayne Divinage is a civil society activist pressuring Pretoria to release the judge's findings publicly. This after earlier reports indicated Ramaphosa would keep the report under wraps because, as his office said, it would contain state security matters. Divinage says he's not sure he trusts the conclusions of an inquiry appointed by the president himself.
Do you think that the U.S. ambassador would stake his life on a claim like that unless he had some other information that we don't have? There are other things like why the transponders switched off for the ship to slip into the Simonstown harbor, leaves under the dark of night after loading stuff on. They say at night was food and supplies for the ship to get back to its next destination. All we want is transparency. You always say that transparency is the enemy of corruption. And unless the president does share the information as openly as possible, then there's always going to be doubt.
Divinage says there are a lot of reasons not to trust the Ramaphosa government. Presidential spokesperson Vincent Magwenya told VOA Ramaphosa would consider making the judge's report public only after he studied it comprehensively. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And as you know, we are celebrating the 60th anniversary of VOA's English to Africa service. Dozens of people have shared their thoughts about our programs, and here are some.
Good morning, VOA. My name is Chibueze Sike. I am speaking from Abuja, Nigeria. I want to also wish you a happy 60th anniversary. I thank God for VOA. You people have been doing a great work, and the All News broadcast has been keeping me abreast of events happening around Africa. I see it as the number one news station because all your information, all your news broadcasts, they are all very accurate. God bless you, and I wish you a happy 60th anniversary.
My name is Chisembe Mwanisa, calling you from Zambia, Kaomba. Since the introduction of the English to Africa service, VOA, by the VOA, I have enjoyed a lot of good programming, especially the Daybreak Africa, as it comes early in the morning from this part of Africa where we are, and it gives us fresh news about Africa. I would like to thank VOA for bringing us a good information about Africa, positive image about Africa, and would like to encourage you to continue with the same spirit. Continue speaking to the brains of Africa that are able to change Africa, and rubbing away the notion that has been portrayed by many foreign radio stations and TV stations that Africa is just a continent full of wars and bad things happening in there. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
It's my first time to join the family of VOA Africa, so it's my pleasure today to link up with you guys. Hope for the best information. Big up.
We thank all of you, and we really appreciate all our listeners. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokpilia Baro, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.